Coming up on TNT, is Apple acquiring Waze? We'll talk about it. Microsoft says that YouTube won't give it a nice app. And the Ubuntu phone, is it happening soon enough? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, January 3rd, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by viewers like you, because without you, we would not get paid. Thank you so much. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we try to make some sense of all of the tech stories of the day and put them into context with viewers like you. We're going to start off with the top 10 stories of the day in the News Fuse. Sort of the top 11 stories of the day. We've got some breaking news right off the top. The FTC is announcing the results of the Google investigation right now, 10 a.m. Pacific time. The event is being webcasted. FTC Chairman John Leibowitz is going to make the announcement at FTC headquarters in Washington. We will do our best to make some sense of this story as we continue on along the show. Sometimes timing of news can be pretty fun. All right, on to the News Views. Rumors are swirling that Apple is acquiring social mapping service Waze. A source tells TechCrunch that negotiations are advanced, but Waze wants $750 million, and Apple is only prepared to go up to, $400 million, plus $100 million in incentives. Waze has been on a roll since the Apple Maps fiasco helped it gain more market share, and last year rolled out Waze Ads, a location-guided ad platform for local businesses and brands that want to market to drivers nearby. I don't know, Apple. Might be worth it. You've got the cash.
Sprint will launch a new service called Sprint As You Go, where the company will offer phones without contracts ranging from $50 to $250 in price. $70 per month will get you unlimited talk, text, and web. There's an even cheaper $50 per month option if you go with a prepaid feature phone. Sprint As You Go launches on January 25th.
If tablet web traffic doesn't lie, then Apple might be in some trouble. Chatika Insights surveyed a sample of hundreds of millions of impressions from its ad network back in December, and iPad traffic declined by 7.14%. That's a big drop. Now, is this inevitable because the market share had to start evening out at some point for Apple? Or was it just a fluke month because December might have been a month where a lot of iPad owners were traveling or otherwise not accessing the web? Probably more to come when we get some January numbers.
Samsung's already announcing products you'll see at next week's Consumer Electronics Show. The company unveiled two Windows 8 powered machines in its Series 7 line. The Kronos is a 15.6-inch laptop with a multi-touch screen standard. The Ultra is a thinner notebook with a 13.3-inch display with an optional touchscreen and an optional LTE modem. Samsung still hasn't spilled the beans on that TV it teased the other day, though.
Microsoft is accusing Google of blocking a full-featured YouTube app for Windows Phone. One of its lawyers has written a blog post about it. This isn't a new complaint, though. Microsoft has been talking to regulators since 2010 about this. Unlike YouTube clients for Android and iPhone, YouTube for Windows Phone is basically just a wrapped mobile web version because it doesn't have access to the full APIs. Microsoft is now claiming that senior Google executives recently told engineers at YouTube not to make it better.
The Wall Street Journal reports that Microsoft has acquired home automation startup IDH Group R2 Studios. Back in December, reports circulated that Google, Apple, and Microsoft were interested in the company. The journal says that Microsoft plans on using R2 Studios technology to bolster its Xbox division. Control your whole house with your Xbox? I'm in.
Speaking of Xbox, blogger and spokesman Major Nelson has fired up a few Xbox fans. Yesterday, he launched a countdown to the 2013 E3 Games Expo with the cryptic words, "And it's on." Microsoft is expected to announce a new version of its Xbox 360, whatever it may be called, though Microsoft has refused to formally comment. Maybe Major Nelson's just majorly excited about hanging out in downtown LA for a few days. I don't know. I like the Xbox rumor better.
I doubt it's LA. The hard-to-find Nexus 4 may be easier to find soon. T-MobileNews.com says that the Nexus 4 will be available in all T-Mobile retail locations this month. The phone will remain available in the Google Play Store as well.
The Virginia Supreme Court has ruled that a woman who posted a negative Yelp review of a local contractor shouldn't be forced to edit her comments on the basis of defamation. This overturns a preliminary injunction in the lawsuit, which would have required editing of the review in question. Jane Perez had hired Christopher Dietz of Dietz Development, a Washington, D.C.-based contractor, to do some painting and refinishing and various other construction-related tasks worth $53,000 at her home back in 2011.
Samsung will start selling Tizen-powered smartphones this year. The Linux-based Tizen operating system is a collaboration between Samsung, Intel, and other industry players. Samsung said the device will be competitive and be part of an expanding lineup. Details like a specific release date or number of initial models, oh, they weren't mentioned.
All right, well, let's get into some of our top stories of the day. And to help us with that, Patrick Norton, not only host of This Week in Computer Hardware, but also the lovely Techzilla of my alma mater, Revision 3. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, everybody.
How's it going?
Exciting news today. I'm not freezing like I was an hour ago because I'm inside and not outside.
Well, we're glad that you're not, we're not losing you to the elements. Thanks for being here today. Let's start with this this rumor started making the rounds yesterday about Apple possibly in the market of buying Waze, which is the social mapping app. Waze is already a data partner for Apple's Maps app, so it wouldn't be unusual for the two companies to be friendly. But also, Waze benefited quite a bit from the Apple Maps fiasco a few months ago when iOS 6 rolled out, boosted its market share to 10% of U.S. iPhone users from about 7%. So they definitely got quite a few more users. That was according to a study from a mobile data compression company, Onavo. TechCrunch source says the negotiations are definitely happening, but Waze wants more money. I mentioned this in the news views. Apple's about to go up to, if you put in incentives and cash together, $500 million. Waze wants more. Then again, Waze had less than $1 million in revenues last year, so you might wonder if Waze is I don't know, being realistic.
Crazy.
Yeah, but then again, I mean, there's all sorts of factors here, and we have to assume, okay, let's just assume that they're talking. Last year, Waze started rolling out its Waze ads, where if I was driving, I might be marketed to by some local business or a brand that was located nearby me, where maybe I could get off on an exit, that sort of thing. So Waze is obviously taking ads seriously, but I'll start with you. Do you think that this makes sense? The two companies don't seem like they fit that well to me.
I definitely think it makes sense for Apple. And if they were taking on Waze, it's not like Apple takes products and then keeps them the way they are. Mm-hmm. They take their infrastructure, they take their teams, they integrate them into Apple, and iOS Maps needs help. And if they can get any sense of expertise from Waze, which made it kind of a game, I mean, you can crowdsource a whole bunch of this information. If Apple can obtain that information for less cost than it does for them to have an own fleet of cars, I think it makes a lot of sense for Apple. As for Waze, I mean, they're just a company sitting around waiting to be acquired, it looks like. If Apple doesn't get them, I could see somebody else picking them up.
Patrick, what do you think? I mean, does Apple has not had great success in the social realm in the past.
Right.
But this is something that it possibly could use for its Maps app.
I was actually having that while you were talking about the problem with Maps before. I was thinking, like, well, they also suck at social, right? They've never had a really good social launch. Waze has figured out a way to make Maps social in a way that people actually use it, which is a coup, right? Because they basically got their user base to help. What took Google years and years and millions of dollars and all those people driving around in cars, Waze figured out to do by basically throwing out an app, making it free, and having people create some incredibly valuable data. You know, I'm a little afraid of the idea of Waze being purchased by Apple because I think Waze is a really good product and I want Apple to screw it up. I agree with Yaz that Apple's got serious problems with their mapping program. I disagree, though, that anybody else might purchase them because I think anybody else who would have the money to purchase them doesn't really need what Waze has. Google's already sorted it out. Google's got it sorted out. Microsoft, I think, would roll their own product and kind of already have with Bing. I'm trying to think of who would actually buy them and what they would do with them. I mean, because Waze is claiming they have like 20 million users already. If they can figure out a way to monetize that, then that's a really tidy business. I mean, they've got $50 million in the bank from investments already, maybe even more than that from like, because they're on their Series C funding. I'd be really curious to see who would actually pay for them, because I'm sure the VC wants a big giant payout, and they're not going to agree for anything what they consider less money for a company with as much cash on hand as Apple has.
Well, yeah, and Apple can certainly afford them. But then again, last month we also had the rumor that Apple was in talks to acquire Foursquare again to help bolster its local search results, because Foursquare has so much data. Apple could buy both of the companies, but you know, Foursquare would be a $500 million purchase as well, just because of its current valuation, and it's even going through another round.
But Waze is international, which Foursquare fundamentally isn't. It's got a really useful product that bolsters. I mean, Apple shot themselves in the foot. They did something really stupid by dropping Google Maps and putting an unfinished product in place, and they have a huge problem internationally as a result. I mean, when like police agencies in Australia are begging people not to use Apple Maps because it's, you know, leading you to the middle of the desert where there's no water, no fuel, and the temperatures hit like, what did it say, 46 degrees Celsius or some other ridiculous number. I mean, they have an international image problem with their maps now. So I think at this point, you know, they probably would do anything to accelerate the process of unscrewing up their mapping system. And they should.
Well, we'll have to see if they can come to a closer number between $750 million and $500. Maybe we got a deal.
I'm kind of curious if both rumors aren't true. Like they're looking at Foursquare. They're looking at Waze. Or, I mean, could Apple ever decide to go, hey, maybe you could change your default map app? Could they be opening it up to Waze and maybe Foursquare instead of going, hey, you use our maps and you're stuck with our maps and that's the way it's going to be because they're kind of lousy. I mean, does Apple even need to buy these companies? Or could they just open up the default options to be like, oh, you can use Waze, you can use this, and have a closed set of partners?
I don't think they want to because they want the revenue. Everybody's like, a big part of the revenue on mobile platforms is going to be through the mapping system. And it's a big source of data gathering. What are people searching for in the area? What are they looking for? Where are they shopping? How can we target that? How can we, you know, turn that into a revenue stream? So I think everybody's desperate to own that, kind of nail that to the floor and own that and have that integrated into their back end of their infrastructure or whatever fancy term I don't understand I should be using to call it. But the, you know, it's the first time I've ever seriously considered jailbreaking my phone was when the new Google Maps came out for the iPhone. And I'm sitting there getting more and more frustrated, realizing there's no way to turn off the craptastic maps in iPhone. And all I want to do, you know what I mean? It's something I desperately want to do. And I'm like, okay, I'd jailbreak my phone to do this. Although it's not even as simple as jailbreaking your phone to get that going. But yeah, it's a problem for Apple right now.
Well, Microsoft's got problems too, right? If we hop over from iOS to Windows Phone, what's the problem with the YouTube app?
Okay, so Microsoft's all mad at Google, as you mentioned, the news fuse. Microsoft wrote up this big blog post saying Google's preventing Microsoft from, quote, offering consumers a fully featured YouTube app for Windows Phone. They said that last month that Microsoft learned that YouTube senior executives told them, well, YouTube was told by Google senior executives not to enable a first-class YouTube experience on Windows phones. And as you mentioned, it's a wrapper. The YouTube app on Windows Phone is a wrapper of the mobile site. Google issued a comment, though, saying Windows Phone users can access all the features of YouTube through its website. Patrick, do you think Google's move is anti-competitive or is it just business? Because Microsoft has a YouTube app or it's available for Xbox. Is it just Google saying, look, this is a small market share?
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit of both. At this point, they're battling on so many fronts. I'm sure they like to take their digs where they can get them. Plus, the market, I agree, the market share is so incredibly tiny for Windows Phone at this point. They probably don't want to turn a lot of engineering talent towards making that work. Plus, it's, you know, it's still time. Like, you know, while we're waiting, it's 10:14. Maybe they've made the announcement, but it's probably also dogpiling and the big, long, strategic. You know, I have this vision that Microsoft and Google and some of the other gigantic tech companies over the next 20 years are going to be figuring out ways to get antitrust suits drawn out across each other as part of their long-term strategies. and why not accuse Google of basically violating antitrust deals? I mean, it's like more lawyer games. It's irritating. And I'm sure Google's just like, oh God, you know, there's like 8 people using this operating system right now. Why should we make this work the way they want us to?
There's more than that, right?
Okay,
I understand that it's a smaller market, but Google's a huge company. There's engineers at YouTube that I'm sure can dedicate a little bit of time to making an app that's more fully featured, that at least makes the Google experience look more, the same across multiple platforms.
Well, isn't that
an incentive too?
I love Windows Phone as an operating system. It's beautiful. It's elegant in a way that I didn't really believe that Microsoft could actually produce an interface that elegant. But it's kind of funny because if you scroll down to the bottom of that Mary Jo Foley article, quote, Microsoft has been stepping up its anti-Google rhetoric as of late, a factor many attribute to Redmond's hiring of former political strategist Mark Penn last year. And predictably, Google's been doing its part to retaliate in the PR marketing wars. I think this is just more about beating themselves up in public is just because that's part of the corporate policy at both companies now.
Yeah.
It's so annoying.
One of the things I think a little bit strange about this is that why is it necessary to like appify everything? HTML5 is fully featured right now. You can do a bunch of things with YouTube. The fact that it's got a wrapper as an app, what difference does that make? I mean, YouTube works really well.
We've had 2 days in a row now where we're talking about wrappers where I have to try not to laugh, It's like...
Isn't that kind of wrapper?
The Windows Phone wrapper app.
Yes, but anyway, shouldn't the browser be sufficient at this point? What is the point of constantly having millions and millions of stupid little apps when you could do the same functions on the web? I mean,
why are there apps at all? Why don't we just have tablets that have, just little browsers?
That was Apple's original intention with the iOS. Remember that? The thing was that the connection speeds weren't fast enough. Mm-hmm. Right. Now we have F4G LTE. We have those speeds. And maybe you don't need this little app that goes, I'm going to preload all your graphics.
On one hand, yeah, but on the other hand, didn't Facebook just re-architect clients from the ground up to eliminate HTML5 because HTML5 performance sucked? Like, it wasn't the connection speed. It was the actual HTML5 code that the performance was so miserable they couldn't stand it anymore.
Well, now that we're talking about tablets, should we talk about some, or do you want to?
We've got some more on the FTC updates. Thanks to Jason. He's been writing in the doc chat. It says Google's has to play fair with its standard essential patents. FTC has settled with Google. Google's unfair practices threatened consumers' access to services or higher prices. U.S. antitrust regulators say no evidence for claim that Google unfairly favors its own services, ends the investigation, and the FTC is requiring Google to license the cell patents from Motorola to competitors. So that's everything in a nutshell that's happened in the last, 17 minutes. They've taken their sweet time discussing this at the FTC webcast, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
They had a long setup.
Yeah.
Somebody's tapping a mic to it off and on. Yeah.
He's got closed captioning and it's just...
Yeah, totally.
They're waiting for us to get through the news views, obviously.
Thank you, FTC.
All right. So we'll do our best to try to,
I'll keep my eye on it.
Okay, thank you. To keep digesting this news as it comes in and what it all means. We were talking about tablets and we've got some good news and some bad news. It just depends on, who you like the best. The Tablet Wars. This is Tablet Palooza. So we're going to start with Barnes & Noble's Nook segment. The segment of Barnes & Noble, which is the Nook segment, is devices, digital content, and accessories associated with the Nook, had revenues of $311 million, which is a big drop from last year's $448 million. Digital content sales, which are ebooks, newsstand apps, increased by 13.1%, but that's compared to an increase of 113% last year. A decline was driven by lower device sales, says the company. Company also says due to lower unit volume and average selling prices, they've seen a fall. They launched the Nook in the UK. No word on performance there, which usually isn't a good thing. William Lynch, who's the CEO of Barnes & Noble, said Nook device sales got off to a good start over the Black Friday period, but then they fell short of expectations for the balance of holiday. We're examining the root cause of the December shortfall in sales and we'll adjust our strategies accordingly going forward. Retail sales, which is physical stores and then also BarnesandNoble.com, had revenues of $1.2 billion, down 10.9%. from last year as well. We're finally getting to the point where, the Kindle Fire has been a hit. Amazon certainly says so. Is the Nook just becoming that product that gets left behind?
Well, the Nook, when it originally came out, was such a hit because it was a cheap device that you can make a full-featured Android tablet to start with. And that kind of lost its big push because the Nexus 7 came out, and you had all these hackable devices out there. So the Nook, as an enthusiast device, kind of dropped off. On top of that, Barnes & Noble's had a hard time getting content deals. They just landed video services just fairly recently versus Amazon's giant universe of videos, books, and music, and everything else. You think Barnes & Noble, you think books. You don't necessarily think of a media consumption device. I think that's they basically have an image problem at this point, because I don't know if they've established in the market that they have videos like Amazon. You've watched their commercials. They're constantly, I'm reading a book on my Fire. Oh, no, now I'm going to switch to a video or my music, and it's all in this one universe. I think that the Nook, I think Barnes & Noble really needs to get on their marketing.
Patrick, where do you stand in the, I'm not exactly sure if you're a tablet owner and what kind of tablet you stick with, but, you know, how do you feel about the Nook?
We've got a couple of aging iPads in the house. My wife owns a Kindle for e-readers, iPads for tablets. And I got to say, I was in Barnes & Noble Christmas shopping at least 4 times in the last 2 weeks. So because there's no other bookstores, big bookstores anywhere near where I live anymore now. And I was thinking, like, they just closed a lot of stores. Not even so much with the tablet sales, but it's just, I just remember being in there like day and a half, 2 days before Christmas, picking up some last minute stuff and being like, there's just not a lot of people in here, and it's a mall. You know what I mean? I was in Emeryville. It's just, you know what I mean? It's a huge shopping center. There's a lot of parking. There's a movie theater. There's a lot of people around. And, it's a nice Android tablet. I don't understand why they're not selling more of them. You know, the reader's really nice. I really like the one with the light. So yeah, it's, I just think that all the big box stores have been getting their asses kicked in the last, can I say that? In the last year.
Yeah, you just did.
You know what I mean? Sorry.
That's all right. You didn't burst into a ball of fire or anything. Well, you know, you mentioned the Kindle Fire, and earlier in the news views, I pointed to some data from Chiquita Insights, which sampled, this is based on, ad impressions, but it's basically looking at due to web traffic coming from a variety of different tablets, who's using which tablet. Kindle Fire got a jump of 3.3 points to about 7.51%, which was the biggest gain by far of any of the tablets. And I mentioned, strangely, even though the iPad still has 78.9%, so a huge, huge, huge lead, it dropped quite a bit, 7.4%. Of web traffic dropped that many points, down to 78.9%. So it was up in the 80s before. The only other loser in the group was the BlackBerry Playbook, which only dropped 0.02%. So, I mean, it's a very negligible number in general.
Well, it depends, right? What if the BlackBerry Playbook is normally like 1% of that entire group? You know, 0.02% would be like 20% of their market.
Well, yes, I think that would be assuming there were a lot of BlackBerry Playbook users.
Looking at advertising traffic over December is kind of horrible. Because back when we worked together at Tech TV and later on at, and when I was working at Ziff Davis again, and everywhere I've ever been, you know, the last 2 weeks of December are just a mess. They're a hole usually. Numbers go down, traffic goes down, because people are doing things like traveling and they're outside playing in snow. They're home from college and getting drunk with their friends. They're not doing what they should be, which is sitting down in front of the computer or the tablet and watching our shows and reading web pages and stuff. I think you said it earlier. I think January, February, March, I think it's going to be a radically different story, but cherry picking like 1 month and that month is December and declaring that there's trouble in doggy land, you know, and iPad is going down. That's a nice clickable headline, but not really valuable analysis. That said, you get 3 months in a row and it drops like a few percent each month. That's a trend and that's a nightmare for Apple. I'm also just kind of like, people are still using the Playbook. I've never actually seen a Playbook outside of a testing lab or a reviewer holding
one. Tom Merritt has one. He brings it out every once in a while. He loaned it to me.
No, he
loaned it to
it's
you.
It's on my desk right now
and,
at home.
Oh, I see. Yes.
So he did not make the move to LA.
Not.
He said one less thing to pack. I mentioned it, but he said one less thing to pack.
Well, Patrick, I think you're absolutely right. December is a weird month in general. This data wasn't even the entire month of December. I think they stopped at about the 27th, which is, you know, it's generally most of the month. But it does show, I guess, I mean, there's certainly Kindle Fire usage. I think that it is inevitable that the iPad will lose more market share. You know, we've said this times before. I think it's going to look a lot more like the smartphone market in the next couple of years. But yeah, it's hard to say that.
Well, it's also...
Go ahead.
I mean, I'm sorry. I was going to say the iPad is such an entrenched product compared to most of the rest of the market at this point that it's just literally like, So many people put down their iPad to go wrap presents and put down their iPad to go shopping and put down their iPad to talk to their children and put down their iPad to make Christmas dinner. You know what I mean? I think it's probably a more accurate reflection of what happens to, you know, traffic and the use of the internet in December than it is a sign that the iPad is going down in flames. But man, that's just a huge market share.
Yeah, it is. I asked, what about Ubuntu for phones? We mentioned this briefly in the calendar during the show yesterday because it was something that happened while we were live. But now we have a little bit more information about it.
Yeah, I mean, how very irritating yesterday during the show. Canonical's like, hey, we're going to show you Ubuntu for phones. And I'm like, I want to talk about this story. So coming out today with it. So there's a bunch of videos out there showing how this operating system is going to work. There's a bunch of features like a favorite apps dock, which is on the left side, not like every other operating system, which has it on the bottom. Task managers, quick app switching using gestures, and there's going to be a mobile SDK for this. And like the current version of Ubuntu, its search will look through your device and also Amazon and Ubuntu's One Music Store. The OS will also support ARM and x86 processors. It's built around existing Android kernel and drivers. Doesn't use a Java virtual machine, so they're not running into any Oracle mess into that ever. But the phones that will be running this operating system are not scheduled until 2014. Now, a bunch of heavy hitters have weighed in already. Vlad Savov of The Verge called the roadmap suicidal. Sasha Sagan of PC Mag said the operating system is nothing without hardware. Patrick, do you think what does the 1 year wait mean for this operating system? Because it's been announced now, we're not going to see it in handsets for 1 year.
I can't decide if that's them trying to sort of ramp up enthusiasm in the open source community, or if they're, you know what I mean? One of the things they hinted that it was going to be compatible with existing or evolving Android hardware, but, you know, I've known Sasha Sagan for a long time. He's our go-to for mobile information. He's really smart. And if he's saying, you know, if he's holding his breath on this one, that's a bad sign for Ubuntu. You know, Firefox OS is a lot like Ubuntu in that it's the mobile extension of a beloved free desktop product. But although several carriers signed on with Firefox, the company has been unable to summon a device. You know, and the length of the development cycle, I think, is phones are moving so fast right now. And if it's taking them this long to finish stuff up, that's a little scary to kind of consider, you know. You know, if Tizen has a chance, it's not because of its open source roots, but because of its bot aside, its giant Samsung's hedge against Google's influence by building its own in-house platform. And he just goes on and talking about all these sort of beaten to death, you know, alternative operating systems out there for phones.
Sarah, the chat room and the articles both mention Palm Pre. They're all screaming like, remember when Palm was like, hey, look, we got this awesome operating system, awesome phone, and then it was delayed for so long. Is this that kind of fear, or like, is this something, is this a little bit too much naysaying?
Well, yeah, I guess you could recall the Palm Pre, you know, as something to compare it to. I think it's odd. I think it's very odd that a company goes, hey, look what we're doing. We're going to introduce this new operating system for phones. And a lot of people who are Ubuntu fans are going to get fired up about it. But yeah, I mean, they said early 2014, and that's assuming that nothing is delayed from then. So it's certainly anticlimactic, I mean, in a big way.
Right.
Then again, yeah, we really are in, we see this with Microsoft. We're in this kind of two-man race for mobile OSs right now. And there are certainly other players. I mean, you throw BlackBerry in there. This could be a really interesting year. But I think it's like the time is now to remind people that, you know, they're going to have other choices. Because if they weren't to announce something like this now, I mean, when do they announce it? At the end of 2013, when people have really decided to, you know, go with the operating system that they've chosen, and people are getting smartphones and getting tied to a certain OS? I don't know. I don't know what the right move is, but this does seem like the timing's very weird.
I mean, Canonical has shown off, you know, they've shown Ubuntu for televisions, versions that are built for embedded versions of it. They've shown off their latest ones with touch, or they have voice commands and all these things. I'm just kind of curious if they're just kind of trying everything at once instead of just focusing on something, because Ubuntu is really important. Okay, it's one of the most popular versions or distros of Linux out there. They even have a version, I believe, for Android that allows you to dock your phone and make it a full Linux laptop or Linux desktop. I just find this move a little strange, and also just the timing seems just crazy. I don't see why on earth they would bother to say 1 year from now. 1 year, that's forever.
Yeah, it's also, you know, when anybody, when somebody announces a major consumer electronics kind of thing a couple weeks before CES or the week before, less than a week before CES, that means they don't have a partner at CES. It means they don't have a major hardware vendor to work with, and they're trying to sort of get the word out. So, you know, in Canonical's ideal world, all of these enthusiastic open source fans in the tech community go and ask Samsung and LG and every, Huawei and everybody else, like, okay, so when are you releasing your Ubuntu phone? And all these companies, you know, in Canonical's ideal world, they all go, gosh, there's all this interest in an Ubuntu phone. But, you know, announcing an operating system for mobile without hardware a year in advance, it seems like they're really desperate to have somebody step up. Like maybe Samsung, you go, why should we develop an operating system in-house? We should partner with Ubuntu. I love Ubuntu, but yeah, it seems like they're desperate for like either a revenue stream, or they're doing that whole the future is handheld, you know, kind of like Intel. It's like we're making mobile parts and they're awesome. Please put one in a phone because ARM is, oh my goodness, they're selling a lot of ARM processors. It just seems like one of those kind of flinging stuff against the wall and trying to get something to stick.
Well, that sort of segues nicely into our next story about Google Plus. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm probably the person in this group who uses Google Plus the least, but I'm still very interested in it. But I was very interested in this Wall Street Journal story. The headline was, "There's no avoiding Google Plus," which sounds, ooh, wow, what are they going to do to us now? The idea is based around the fact that if you create an account to use Gmail or YouTube or another Google service, Zagat, the restaurant reviews service would be one of them, you also get set up with a public Google Plus page that can be viewed by anybody. Ooh. Now, you can opt out of that, and you can choose for that not to result in searches or just to close it down altogether. But, of course, a lot of people don't realize that, and some users have complained that their Google Plus profiles are then tied to an app review that they made in the Google Play Store, for example, and that, you know, they didn't really realize what was going on there, even though Google says this is, number one, we want real people to be commenting because it improves the quality of comments, and we've seen that work in its advantage in other places. So they certainly have a point there. But it's also very Facebook-esque, having your real name tied to your activity, but also who your friends are and what their interests are, so that you've got data to work with advertising networks more smartly. Google said last month 235 million people were using Google Plus features. That means clicking on the plus one button. This is across Google sites, which is up from 150 million in late June. So it's not, you know, it didn't double, but that's certainly a big bump. But I just kind of wanted to gauge what you all think of this whole Google Plus is Google. That's actually something that VP Bradley Horowitz has said. This is part of the Google experience. Google Plus is everywhere. You know, it's not just our social network that people decide to go to look at their feeds. It is part of our strategy moving forward. I don't really have a huge issue with the idea that, you know, you get a Google Plus profile that kind of is created, even if you didn't really mean to, because you do have the option of turning it off. But does it seem pushy? Does it seem like this is Google Plus trying to force you into having the equivalent of maybe a Facebook profile that you're using a lot already?
It definitely seems pushy to me. But the thing is, I've kind of turned blind to that share button. Like, uh-huh. I know it's on top of every single Google service or almost every single Google service, but for some reason, like this morning, I was looking at my email. I'm like, oh, yeah, there's the share button because I was going over this story. And I'm like, I have not used this service or that button in such a long time that I'm like, I guess I'm just kind of used to that big gray blotch up there. And it's like, okay, well, that's just there. It doesn't matter. So, I mean, whether it's pushy, it's one thing that there's a button on every screen, but like since it's in the same location, not glowing or flashing or anything, I'm just not noticing it. So what do you think, Patrick?
You know, it's kind of funny. I'm up on Facebook like every 3 months, whether I need to be or not. But there's at least two services I've stopped using in the past 6 months because they changed over to a Facebook login or decided to require a Facebook login. And I'm kind of looking at this and thinking like, I think Google's going to push this as far as they can until there's a backlash. I mean, the Bradley Horowitz quote, you know, Google Plus is Google. The entry points to Google Plus are many, and the integrations are more every day. And at some point, I think if they keep hammering on this, it's going to irritate me enough that I'm going to be like, screw it, I'm out of Gmail. You know, I'm moving away from Google Plus. Because at some point, I just don't particularly want every – I don't want to have to work hard to keep my life compartmentalized. And it's a little weird for me because I don't want people downloading pictures of my children. So I have to be really careful about what gets posted or what my family members post on different web pages, you know, just because I'm profoundly paranoid. But it's interesting to watch how stuff keeps getting tight. You know what I mean? Everything's getting integrated, everything's getting shared, and all the data is being, you know, even if it's separated, getting logged. I just kind of think they're going to push this and see whether or not, you know what I mean? They're so desperate to gain market share. I don't think they care if they lose like 2% of it, but to pissed off people because they want to pick up 10% here and 10% there and finally turn Google Plus into a real powerhouse of a competitor to Facebook.
You know, Wall Street Journal sources say, and again, these are anonymous sources, CEO Larry Page had pushed the idea of requiring all Google users to sign on to their Google Plus accounts just to view reviews of businesses, say. So that's not to leave a review, you know, in the Google Play Store. And apparently, if these sources have their story right, executives persuaded him not to pursue that strategy because it would make people really upset. So I think Google cares at least enough not to do anything too crazy.
We'll find out.
We will. All right, let's move on to some hardware. Leap Motion.
Yeah, we've talked about Leap Motion before. It's that motion detecting peripherals like $80 or something that will allow you to control your PC or Mac using gestures. It's a tiny thing. It's supposed to be way more accurate than a Kinect. And the news from Leap right now is it's raised $30 million in a B round of funding, but they've also announced a partnership with ASUS. Leap devices and its app store are going to be bundled with some high-end ASUS computers. This is a bundling, okay? This is not an integration. So it's not going to be built into laptops or all-in-ones. You're just going to get this little device as an attachment. And Michael Buchwald, the CEO of Leap Motion, says that deals with other computer makers or smartphone makers are possible in the future. Patrick, what do you think about the deal between ASUS and Leap?
You know, it's I like the Leap. I think it's neat. I know a lot of gamers that are enthusiastic about it. I think the Leap is going to do some really cool things for Windows 8. I've been using a Lenovo Idea Center desktop with a touchscreen monitor, which is cool, right? Look at this big, huge 27-inch monitor. I'd rather use a regular, you know, in a lot of cases, I'd rather use a regular desktop and kind of roll my own touchscreen monitor. I think it's something that's going to, you know what I mean? Like they want to stand out in the giant big box store, or you're searching on Amazon to buy a computer or wherever you're going to buy one. I think what they're trying to do is just make themselves stand out. I think it's going to be a good bundle. Mostly though, I'm just waiting for the Leap to actually ship. Robert Herron's pre-ordered one. I've pre-ordered one. A bunch of other people I know have pre-ordered one, and I want to see the actual device ship, and hopefully they'll ship them to us before they ship them to the PC vendors that they bundled with, which may be entirely selfish on my part, but you know what I mean? It's just one of those products where I want to see it ship because it's so cool and it's so exciting and it's so fun, and you know, it's just, I don't know. I mean, it's cool. It would be a reason to buy an Asus, but it's also probably going to add how much to the price of the Asus.
Yeah, that's hard to say. It's more exciting to me than we were talking on yesterday's show about eye-controlled computing, which I'm still sort of like, I got to see that work well, because right now that just seems, I don't know. I can't think of that many instances where it would work that well or be that helpful. But motion control in general, with your hands, let's say.
Right.
That, I mean, we've already seen that before. We're already used to it enough that we know that it's cool and we want to see more of it.
Sorry.
We're going to have just a bunch of gimmicky computers. So that's what it is. Like, okay, this one, if you shake it, it'll do this. And this one's staring at your back. And this other one can watch you move your hands. And it's like, okay, at what point is it just a gimmick? I mean, this is really cool stuff and I enjoy this as a nerd. But like, what is the useful aspects of this? I'm starting to go, okay, well, great, it's in my ASUS all-in-one, so if I have it in the kitchen, I can swipe the recipes without touching the screen. Like, that's terrific. I mean, is there going to be a lot of functional uses out of this?
That's always like, that's the classic bad sign when there's a CES present, like a CES keynote or presentation, or somebody comes to your office to do a product demo and they're like, it's going to be great for your kitchen PC, because I remember Tandy computers like 30 years ago being like, it's the kitchen PC. Mom can put her recipes on it. And I'm like, yeah, my mom's going to take like, you know, 2 weeks to type up all of her index cards, put them on this computer. When she's going to like search, it's going to take a minute to find the recipe. It's going to put it on the computer screen of this like $4,000 box when she could just, you know, flick through her things, pull a card out and make a recipe. You know what I mean? Like the whole kitchen thing always makes me want to just stand up and laugh and go, ha ha, you know, you don't have a business model. But this is actually, I mean, you know, everybody thought the Kinect, I remember a lot of people being like, the Kinect is like really stupid. And then they started selling them left and right, you know what I mean, hand over fist, and people are actually using them with games. I think this one, it'll be interesting to see who buys them and what they use them for and what it does for Windows 8 adoption. But yeah, I like this. I'm looking forward to the Intel keynote this year because it was so funny last year. I mean, last year's CES, it was like, okay, Samsung's going to make me change my channel by waving like this. And Intel's like, no consumers actually use most of the CPU power we deliver, even in Core i3. So we're going to push vendors to do voice control and gesture control and motion control and Sarah's favorite eye tracking control so that they use a whole lot more computing power in the background to do things that are really simple to do with your fingers on a tablet or with a mouse on a PC. You know what I mean? And it's like, so I think they're going to be pushing really hard to make this stuff practical. But at this point, yeah, you got it right, Yaz. It's just a lot of gimmicks and a lot of we're doing it because we can do it. At least this one, what kind of makes the leap sound so neat is the fact that it does such an amazing job dealing with very minute amounts of movement, which makes it a lot more functional than a lot of the devices we've seen at this point.
All right. With that, let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
This is a random story indeed. I actually heard about this. I know. It's worked so well. I heard about this actually on the radio on my way up to work this morning. I thought, what? In China, there's some very upset drivers because they've got red lights, yellow lights, and green lights, just like the ones that you're used to. Now, when the light turns yellow, you have to stop as if the light was red. This is actually a new law dealing with how people approach traffic intersections. I guess particularly in Beijing, there was a huge problem with during the yellow light, a mad scramble to get across an intersection, which obviously can become very dangerous. So the new law is yellow means stop. And if you don't, you could be fined or pulled over or whatever, the same way you would if the light was red. The official Chinese news agency has criticized the new rules, and some say this is contrary to Newton's first law about momentum. You are screwing with physics right now.
Because that's why we have brakes on cars, right? That's screwing with physics too. Big deal.
Officials say, hey, we have to reduce the number of wrecks, road wrecks in China. And that's because people have bad driving habits and vehicles that aren't maintained. And one critic said the yellow light rules are stupid and evil.
Now, some people in the chat room are saying, what's the point of yellow? I think the difference is yellow says you should be stopping right now. Red says you should already be stopped.
Well, the yellow.
That's a good
also,
way to say
there's
so.
There's an infrastructure there. You're not going to be like, they're going to send out crews everywhere, just black out the yellow. I mean, that's why you got to change it in the law instead of going out and changing every sign.
This is a social conditioning exercise because in one of the things, you know, there's just a lot of poorly maintained cars. There's a lot of mayhem. There's a lot of craziness. Kind of like driving in San Francisco. And what they want to do is they want to force people to stop thinking about yellow as the time to accelerate to beat the light and is to be the time to just slow the expletive down before somebody gets hurt. I think it's going to be an incredible failure, or either that, or it's going to be an amazing revenue generator for the police, for the country, however you want to call it. But It's
it's random.
I just don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, I know. That's a lot of people to socially condition. Yes, we'll have to see. If any of our viewers or listeners are in China, particularly Beijing, and have any want to weigh in on all what the traffic situation is like, please do let us know, TNT at twit.tv. Let's move on to the calendar. Ayaz, do you want to take the calendar today?
Sure, I'll take it.
We're all doing musical chairs.
Why not?
All right.
Apple's Do Not Disturb bug, which meant people were disturbed even when they didn't want to be, won't be fixed until Monday, January 7th, 2013. And another Apple News, its Q1 2013 earnings call is scheduled for January 23rd at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific.
Get ready. Get excited. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Sure. Let's see what's incoming. We got an email from Jim. It says, hey, guys, regarding that Samsung TV mentioned yesterday, why a tall TV? How about a second screen with channel display, menus, and possibly icons to click with something similar to a Wiimote? A 32-inch screen with a simple on-screen display capabilities could be added to a large screen set for less than $200. Get the closed caption display off the actor's feet. Says Jim.
We sort of talked about that yesterday, didn't we?
Well, he's suggesting that it's basically like a Nintendo DS style a split screen.
It didn't look like that in the mock-up, though, in that ridiculous ad. Patrick, do you know what we're talking about?
I have not seen the Samsung tall TV. I am slightly afraid, though.
Well, it looks like a widescreen TV that's been turned 90 degrees, and we were speculating yesterday, what could that be? Like, what would you do with all...
Well, that was a teaser image. We don't even know what it's supposed to look like officially. It's supposed to have an unprecedented shape.
Right.
So
this is the teaser image.
And gallery design.
Which is unprecedented, for sure.
I just feel like, you know, assuming that the ratios of content don't change, that's just so much space either on the top or the bottom or on top and bottom to add things like widgets and Twitter feeds and stuff that I don't want to look at. When I'm
is this a return of, is it picture over picture, picture on picture?
We don't know.
Maybe it's just make your head tilt. You're confused about
the
news,
transparent,
and you can
monitor?
Watch the TV properly.
Right. Oh, I know. It's for people like me who just want to lay on the couch. This is actually not a terrible idea all of a sudden. That's a problem I have, where I'm like pillow, the head's up, but I want to be horizontal.
You know,
actually, when you take a look at this promo thing, this bottom thing right there could be the bar that the emailer is talking about, right? Because this is the actual teaser video.
Uh-huh.
And it has nothing to do with portrait, you know, at least as far as we can tell. But maybe that's what this bar is.
I don't know. Good question.
We'll find out.
I hope it auto-hides.
Let's keep guessing and see if we get it right.
Yeah, right. Got another email from Mark in Royal Oak, Michigan, who says, I was thinking that one of the winners of eye-tracking computers would be advertisers. They'd be able to tell companies how many people actually looked at their ad and for how long, instead of how many pages they appeared on. There are many ads that I never click on, but I may remember seeing one and go directly to their site later. Of course, this would lead to more annoying ads that jump to grab your eyes' attention. Keep up the good work. Yeah. Also, I think you'd get so much false positive information.
Can ads get any more annoying than the popovers that happen and then they black out the screen behind it? I mean, they're already eye-grabbing.
Yeah, they're pretty annoying.
I don't know how much more they could possibly get. But then again, I have the bad habit of using my cursor to like where I'm looking. I will actually move the cursor to like maybe an ad. I'm like, oh, I'm looking at that because I might click it. So I don't know if they need that data of my eyes staring at this LG Google TV ad, which I don't need.
Well, yeah. And I mean, if your eye is drawn to an ad that's blinking, you know, some sort of fluorescent color, you know, if you don't click on the ad or you just go like, oh, that's the worst. I mean, that doesn't count as anything too positive either. I don't know. I'm sure there are advertisers who would be very interested in this kind of data, whether or not it's
statistics companies ready to sell it to.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we have come to the end of our fine program here on January 3rd. The new year is off to a great start. Patrick Norton, thank you so much for joining us today. You and
My
the
pleasure.
Texilla team are going to be at CES next week. What are you going to do? Where are you going to focus your energy?
We are going to cover every single product at CES. We plan to produce over 2,000 videos in 5 days. That would actually just be the new products. It's really scary. We're going on to CES. Robert Herron, Veronica Belmont, and I. Texilla is going to be posting probably like 15 videos a day.
Wow.
We're going to be covering, you know, the pre-event on Sunday, the press day on Monday, and then we're going to be all over the show floor Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And then Friday, I will hopefully not be sick when I climb back on the plane to return to Oakland. And
good luck with that.
Thank you. Yeah, well, you know, it's funny – Somebody asked me like why I don't do autograph signings at CES, because 2 years in a row with Tech TV, we did these huge autograph signings, Leo, myself, and everybody else. And I caught strep 2 years in a row.
Oh, boy.
So at this point, anytime I leave CES and I don't have a 104-degree temperature and a tonsil the size of a golf ball, I consider that a win. So the bar is pretty low for leaving Vegas. As long as I'm not three quarters dead, I'm really excited at this point.
Well, we hope for your health, Patrick. We really do.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Everybody also who submitted stories to our Reddit. Technewstoday.reddit.com is our subreddit. Not only can you submit stories there, but you can vote them up or down. So if you don't, you see somebody submitted a story, get it up to the top so that we help, you help us build our show, build our lineup. So thanks to everybody who communicates with us that way. And thanks to all of you. If you want to get a hold of us, you can write us tnt@twit.tv is our email address. You can leave us a voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. Tomorrow we've got Darren Kitchen. He's our Friday regular. We'll see you then.